Good morning. Glad to see you today. Welcome to our second service here at the First Colony Church of Christ. We are grateful to have you with us today. I want us to congratulate a young couple right over here. You know, sometimes we'll sometimes recognize somebody. They've got a mile marker, wedding anniversary, 25 years, 30 years, 40 years, et cetera, et cetera. This couple's been married less than 48 hours. I had a chance to do their wedding on Friday night, and many of you know Haley Huskins, now Joshua and Haley Lowe. So Mr. and Mrs. Lowe, would you please stand over here so that we might celebrate with you today? There they are. Yeah. They're leaving this afternoon on their honeymoon, and anyway, so glad to have you here this morning. We're starting today a new message series called Friends, and we'll three out of the four Sundays here in June we'll be talking about this. And the title of this morning's message is The Friendfluence Effect. Let me just start out and tell you where I'm going. Here's the big idea. Here's the gist of this series. You ready? Here it is. Good friendships empower. They empower, and they are worth the effort. Good friendships steer the trajectory and tone and atmosphere of your life, and they are worth the effort, worth the time and the effort. There's a statement from the book of Proverbs. The wisest person who ever lived says this, Proverbs 13, verse 20. He that walks with the wise grows wise, but a companion of fools will suffer harm. One more time. You walk with the wise, you grow wise. The companion of fools suffers harm. How many of you, when you were younger, or maybe this is where you are right now, your parents have said, I'm not sure I really want you hanging around him. I'm not sure I want you hanging around her. I'm not sure I want you hanging around that group. Anybody here ever hear those words besides me? Sure. How many of those parents said that, you know, like about you? I don't want you hanging around him or her. We are fully aware that the people with whom you surround yourself, they impact the trajectory and the tone and the atmosphere and the temperature of your life. Now, here's the thing. Nobody wears a t-shirt saying, I'm a fool. And quite honestly, a lot of foolish people are really fun. They're fun. They're funny. They might have deep pockets and cool jet skis that they are happy for you to use whenever they are. But after you finish a weekend with them, you need to feel like I got to take another shower because I don't feel like I love God more. I don't feel like I love the church more. I don't feel like I really honor my marriage more. Because what they talk about and how they talk about it, it's just draining and souring. And the person who spends a lot of time with wise people grows wiser. And the person who spends a lot of time around foolish people becomes more foolish. Now you say, but wait a minute, Ronnie. Doesn't the Bible say that Jesus was a friend to sinners and that we need to do that? Answer, yes, but listen carefully. Jesus is for all time the prototype of the person who can be in the world but not of the world. And that takes a great amount of maturity and resolve to be the kind of person where you can show compassion and care for foolish people without foolishness infecting you. And sometimes when you're younger, that's why your parents will say, and listen, boys and girls, nobody loves you like your mom and dad. Listen to them. And when they say, sweetie, I don't want you around that group, pay attention to what they're saying. Because the person who walks with wise, whether you're 10 or 58, you become wiser. And the person who surrounds themselves with a foolish subculture becomes even more foolish. All right, let's take a look at a narrative today, a story of two friends in the Bible, Jonathan and David, nothing untoward in their friendship at all. But these guys became a different type of friend to one another. And every time you read a narrative, you know, like for example, we read this narrative, this story in the Bible, it's not like it says, well, here are six tips to becoming a friend. You read it and you step back and you go, okay, what does this teach me about God? What does this teach me about God's will and God's grand purposes in life? Because you do know, don't you, that God in his very nature is friendship. The Father, Son, the Spirit, our triune God, the Trinity, he is friendship in his very nature. And he wants that for you, that you will not just have friends. I want you to have friends, but I also want you to be a good friend to others. That's something we taught our kids early on. And repeatedly we'd say, I know you want friends, but here's the most important principle. Learn how to be a good friend. Low drama, low maintenance, constant, dependable. Learn how to be a friend. If you're the kind of person where you go, you know, I want friends. I want to be a high drama, high maintenance, vampire-like, blood-sucking presence upon other people. And listen, learn how to be a friend. And yes, there are going to be times when you weep with one another, but you also rejoice with one another. Well, let's read this little narrative here out of 1 Samuel 18. After David had finished talking with Saul, by the way, this is the day where David had had his great victory over Goliath. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. And from that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. Notice, and Jonathan makes a covenant with David, because he loved him as himself. And Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic, even his sword, his bow, and his belt. This friendship comes at great personal cost to Jonathan because he is in line to become the king. But instead, what does he do to David? David, I am giving you the kingly attire. And Jonathan takes this friendship and he raises the bar. And he takes it from convenience to what? Covenant. And I hope today you'll take some cues from David and Jonathan. You know, we live in a culture, and sociologists write a lot about this. They say that over the last 50 years, marketplace values have impacted so many relationships outside the marketplace. They infect the church, they infect friendships. I mean, for example, marketplace values. You know, I do business with you, but, you know, if I can find the same widget you're selling me cheaper, then I might have to start doing business with somebody else. Well, a lot of people bring that same mentality into their friendships. In other words, I'm not really your friend, I'm a user. I'm networking. What can I get from you? And if all of a sudden I can't really get from you what I need, well, this relationship, it's not about covenant. It's convenience. I'm here to use you. I want you to be a friend where you're not a user. You're not just a nothing wrong with networking. Nothing wrong with having marketplace relationships. But I hope that in the church, I hope that in your circle of friendships, that people can look at you and say, this is a person who's not just looking to use me. I can depend upon this person's stance and posture toward me. Okay, let me make a few observations this morning. Five very quick ones. Here's the first one. Friendships have varying levels, and that's okay. You can't be best friends with everybody. That is fine. Let me put some numbers up here on the screen. It is said that you can know about 150 people by name. That's great. That's good. Now, beyond that, it's sort of asymmetrical. In other words, you can know about 1,500 people. They may not. I know who J.J. Watt is. He doesn't know who I am. I know who he is. There are people, it's asymmetrical beyond 150. Folks that you know them, they don't necessarily know you. But there are about 150 people that you can know by name. Now, about 50, you could have 50 really pretty good friends. And 15, generally speaking, close friends. And 5, intimate friends. Years ago, I heard somebody say, if you can have 3 really good friends in your life, count yourself blessed. And I thought, well, that's kind of cynical. but it's really true. Now, it's fine for us to be distant friends, but even if I'm your distant friend, hopefully you can count on me at a time you might need me, and vice versa. That I'm not, even though you might be a distant friend, hopefully I'm not a user to you. The Bible says this. Friends come, friends go. A true friend sticks by you like family. Proverbs 17:17, friends love through all kinds of weather. For some of us, the missing link in our life would be that inner circle. For some of us, the missing link in our life is not that we don't know 150 people by name, but that we don't have a small circle that's well-defined with whom we can talk about the core issues in life. I hope you will pursue that. You won't find it just happenstance, but it's created as you walk through life. Now, when we all get to heaven, we're going to have endless time and energy. And we won't have to worry about sleeping and eating and working. And so we'll have plenty of time. But until we get there, we all just have a dance card with so many slots. And we're all like Legos, just so many attachment points. You can't be best friends with everyone, but I hope you will pursue that close inner circle. Secondly, friends let you in. It's what they do. Eugene Peterson says this: friendship is a much underestimated aspect of spirituality. It's every bit as significant as prayer and fasting. And like the sacramental use of water in baptism and bread and grape juice in communion, friendship takes what is common and turns it into something holy. In other words, how do we become friends? It's very mundane. It's very ordinary. We go on walks together, play cards together, discuss things together. You just talk out loud. You think out loud. You don't really have to filter the words so much. C.S. Lewis says, you become friends by just over time talking about things, and you go, you too? you too? It's very mundane. It's very ordinary, but you're willing to take that step and become a little more vulnerable. You're willing to take that step and create another opportunity for a conversation. Friends let you in. Secondly, or thirdly here, third observation, friends lift you up. Proverbs 27:9, a sweet friendship refreshes the soul. Ecclesiastes 4, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up, but pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves, and a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. What's he saying here? He's saying that friendship, it's more than a luxury. It's more than icing on the cake. It's something vital in your life. Now, years ago, I read a book by a guy named Gordon MacDonald, and he had a little chart in there, and I've thought a lot about this over the last 20 years, and I think he's right on about something. If you're taking notes, I want you to write this down. Even if you're not taking notes, I hope you'll write this down. I want you to write down a plus sign, and below the plus sign, a zero, and below that zero, a negative mark, a minus symbol. And MacDonald said that all of us in life, we encounter, as we deal with people in relationships, there is an exchange of energy. There's an exchange of passion. And there are some people who are what you might call VDPs. They are very draining people. Do not look at anyone as I'm saying this, please. And you know this, right? These are people who can brighten a room by leaving. Right? You know people like this. This is the kind of person where when they get to heaven, they will be looking for dust on the streets of gold. Right? That's who they are. They are very draining people. And you know what? You can't get around. You can't get away from them, and you don't need to. So you need to. You're going to be around them, and the healthier you are, and the healthier your group, and the healthier your church, the more some very draining people want to be around. Why? Because a tick needs a dog. You say, Ronnie, I can't believe you're saying this. You would be so proud of me if you knew what I wasn't saying, okay? Very draining people. And I'm about to say something, and I please, if you're handicapped, please don't take this. I'm just trying to use this as an illustration. If I were in a wheelchair, you wouldn't come up to me and say, hey, Ronnie, let's go for a jog around the block, because, you know, physically, I'm just not able to do that. And there are people in your life. You may have somebody in your family like this. You may have somebody in your extended family like this. And you're thinking, oh, this year when we get together for Thanksgiving, this year at Christmas, it'll be different. They won't complain on and on about the turkey. Whatever. This year they'll actually say thank you. This year they'll actually say, oh, what a one. But it's not going to happen, because they're in a relational wheelchair. And you have very draining people in your life. You say, well, let me just X them off. No, you can't. They're a part of your life, and you're going to minister to them. You're going to encourage them. You're going to be a healthy presence there. Now, listen, what you do have to do, you do have to make sure, and you need to monitor all your relationships, because if all you do is spend time around very draining people, you're going to wake up one day and go, what happened to my energy level? Why do I not have any passion? Why do I not have any enthusiasm? Why? Now, by the way, toddlers and infants tend to be very draining people. Ah, but there are people on the plus side too, right? These are people who are, they're very inspirational people. Why are they very inspirational? They're teammates, they're mentors, they are coaches, or get this, they may be somebody much younger than you. They might be in the second grade, but you love teaching them. You love talking to them. They may be in middle school or high school. They're not as old as you are. They're not a peer. You know, I have a new friend by the name of David, and we've been friends now for about a year and a half. We get together every Monday morning. I'm 20 years older than he is. I've been a Christian a lot longer than he has, but he just pumps me up. He fires me up. Why? He's passionate. He's hungry to learn. He's hungry to grow. We just get together. We pray. We talk about how we can be better dads, better husbands, better followers of Jesus. And I'm much older than he is. I've been a Christian a lot longer than he has. But he mentors me. He inspires me just through his attitude. But now listen, there are people who are zeros. And again, not a criticism. You just need to be aware of this. And people who are zeros, these are the folks that you know in your life, and you're happy to have a conversation about the Texans, about the Astros. They might ask you about your new curtains. They don't sap anything from you. Neither do they build anything into you. And they are happy to sort of just soak up you. My encouragement to you is for you to be a VIP in the lives of others, and for you to have some VIPs in your life. And they may be someone, you know, I have some VIPs in my life. They don't have a clue who I am, but I read what they write. I might listen to what they have to say. Friends, they'll let you in. They'll lift you up. Number four, they'll make you sharper. Proverbs 27:17, you use steel to sharpen steel, and one friend sharpens another. Proverbs 27:6, the wounds from a friend, they're worth it. Kisses from an enemy, they'll do you in. What does a friend do? A friend loves you so very, very much, they're willing to speak truth, or their perceived truth to you, and wrap it in as much care and soft love as is possible. And here's how you can know whether or not I just want to use you or be a friend to you. If I'm not willing for you to speak into my decisions, I just want to use you. But if I'm willing for you to speak into my decisions before I activate them, you have my permission to ask me any question. You have my permission to ask me any question or to make an observation because I believe you care about me. Now, if I just want to use you, hey, you have no right to ever speak into any of my decisions. But friends, we can make one another sharper. And I am so grateful, so very grateful for the people in my life who've been like steel and iron, giving me lots of encouragement, lots of attaboys, and sometimes saying, Ronnie, I got a question here I need to ask. I got an observation I want to make. And last of all, I got a question. Are you willing to be intentional in the cultivation of friendships? And over the next 6 weeks, maybe for you to take a look at some of your current friendships and say, okay, these are good. What can I do to make some of these good friendships great? What intentional action? How can I take initiative, spend a little more time? The gardening principle, if I ignore it, it'll wither. But if I nurture it, give it some time and energy and TLC, this thing can grow and mature. Take initiative and you will reap the rewards. Sit back and be passive and just sort of take it as it comes. Well, who knows what'll happen? You say, well, Ronnie, I appreciate you talking about this, but I've been burned on friendships before. I know you have, and I'm sorry. I think everybody in the room has. Have you ever been to a restaurant and gotten a bad meal? Anybody ever done that besides me? Yeah. Did you stop eating? Did you ever go to a movie and you walk out and you say, that movie was awful? Did you stop going to movies and watching? No. I realize you may have had a bad experience at a restaurant. I realize you may have had a sour experience at a movie theater. I realize you may have had a sour experience with a friendship. But good friendships empower. And they are worth the risk. And they are worth the effort.